What you waiting for? Put your back in it. Just a little more. Throw your weight in it now. Till your body okay. Work it hard and long. When you finish that.
The hip knocker.
Go down, go down, go down. Come up, come up.
Boom. As you know, we hosted a very special live episode at the Bradog Youth Service in Dublin 1 to mark the launch of the 2024 Coca-Cola Thank You Fund.
For 14 years, the Coca-Cola Thank You Fund has supported projects around Ireland that deliver vital programmes for young people aged 16 to 25 in communities all across Ireland that are just like ours. This year, the fund is allocating €200,000 in grants to community-based projects for young people in Ireland and Northern Ireland that are focused on learning and sustainability.
So, it's well worth getting involved. The deadline for applications is fast approaching. It's this Friday, the 24th of May at 6 p.m. So if you are a youth leader or a member of a youth group and want to apply for a share in the 2024 Thank You Fund, visit www.cocacola.ie.
You'll see some lovely photos of me and Terence as well on the website.
Episode 175 of Talking Bollocks, brought to you by Go Loud. It's me, Terry Flower.
It's me, COB.
And this week we're joined by
Eddie Sherlock.
Eddie, what's the crack?
How are you doing?
How are you?
Oh, good, yeah.
You've become a bit of a regular with us now. I know this is your first appearance here, but yeah. Can't get rid of you.
Yeah, yeah.
We're getting him on just to get rid of him.
We booked him once and he just keeps turning up at the stadium playing songs.
Yeah, it's mad how it worked out. Well, I kind of, remember I said you would have bought a ticket for the show.
Yeah, you said
was
this.
Postponed. Yeah. I still wrote and I'm going to see that. I bring my guitar along, whether they like it or not.
Yeah. Did I tell you that?
No, he said it was in the stadium.
Did he? Yeah. A good friend of mine, one of my best mates lives in Australia, Wes, loves just loads of people over there. When I was over in Australia last year, and he was saying, you have to get onto that show, you have to get onto that show. And I said, look, I'm fucking walking on it, like, you know. And I got onto the live show, which is in that, and next of all, I texted you today. He said, I fucking told you, you manifested that yourself. And also, big shout out to Wezzo out there in Brisbane and Australia.
And look at Wezzo, we made it.
I remember I was at a gig in Cabra last year, and you were playing on it, and your ma came over and starred on me.
Yeah, that's what, yeah.
No, she did, didn't she, Eddie?
I didn't know about that, yeah. She goes, because my mad now, you're nanny now pretty well. And I seen her, I said, I'll go out and say hello to them and introduce myself. And then I heard that in the group, I went, it didn't. I can't believe he's already going over.
Let her roar.
I didn't hear about this.
Let her roar. She said, I'm from Dawes yesterday. She's from Dawes yesterday, isn't she?
Yeah.
And you're from Dawes yesterday, and I know your family, and if you don't get him onto that fucking podcast, I'll kill you. And I said, yeah, I'm up here scouting. I am. She goes, get him on. I said, I will. Booked him in the next week.
That was the week before the show, wasn't it?
Yeah. My ma's originally from Cowes Lane, the side of Bow Street there, and then they moved up to the flats.
Yeah.
And then my nanny moved up to the Broadstone there, up across from the football pitch there.
Yeah, but that was the first time that I seen you live then. But honestly, it blew me away. Like, I was like, what the fuck, that was unreal.
I said it to you because we're looking for a musical act and we're trying to change it up. I said, Eddie Sherlock, Terry. And he's like, I'm going to see him next week. Do you know what I mean? He's like,
have a look.
And then I seen you live and I was like, fuck. And I rang him and he was like, I told you.
I don't wear the fur coats all the time.
Oh, yeah.
That was a bet.
Yeah. I was like, what the fuck is going on here?
He was on that gig as well, wasn't he?
It was Damo's gig, yeah. It was
Damo. It
was Keira and a band. Was Mick McLaughlin and what was the other lads' names from Cabot, the lovely fellas, can't think the name, I can't pronounce the name, they were on as well. Great day actually.
It was
people in the tent or something.
Yeah, it was fucking deadly, it was, but
reasonable.
Like I said, we can't get rid of you. We did a benefit night for Christy Dignam. Curtis set it up there in Vicar Street a couple of weeks ago and we were all at it, and we MC'd the night. We turned up, you're there. Oh, fuck's sake. But on that night, Eddie, we were obviously chatting to you and all backstage after it and whatever, and you told us you were in the middle, or you were about to start writing a song about
it. Oh, it started it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I was watching that interview with your man, he was on RT. Oliver Callan, yeah. And I was sitting in the bedroom with the guitar, and I was just listening to it, being nosy and all. I thought it was very good and all, and four chords was just sat there, and I was like, right, I will go with this, and then I had it. Like kind of a line or so, and I got a bit of a block then, because I was like,
what kind of line here, Eddie? A line of writing, yeah?
Yeah.
Because it just sounded like you were sitting in the room and I had a line or so.
How all good music is written, isn't it, Eddie?
What?
That's how all the greats write their music, though.
Yeah, well. Yeah, no, I was in the room and I typed out a line. yeah. into my phone. And I like, so you normally when, let's say, we walk, you get four cards or three cards or whatever, and then you ramble it in your head until it sits, and then you walk off that thing. And then I was trying to mention names of people that were on the show, and then I was like, it was about a list of forever.
Yeah.
And how do you pick out which ones and all? And then I text you and I said, I left it alone actually, I hadn't gone near that. Then when you rang me last Thursday, I said, wait, I'm going to have to go again with this song.
Yeah.
So I started messing around with it, and I said, it'd be funny if I could bring a song on the show, you know? And I've listened to loads of the podcasts, not every single one, but a lot of them, and I love it. So I said, right. But I got the block with the names, and I text you, and I said, is there anything that sticks out, and blah, 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 and you gave me a few names, and then I was laughing at you, and I was like, oh, I'm going to pissing him off now. He was like, no, I don't have favourites, and I don't
know. No, he goes, he texts me, and he goes, you were saying to me before who your favourite podcast was, and I deliberately know anytime someone answers that, I won't give a straight answer, because I always find it disrespectful. Yeah, no. Imagine, like, you're at the being on Eddie, and you live, and someone asked me, who's your favourite episode? And I say someone else. I'm like, that's not
I appreciate that. But no, I think I was at the saying it, arseways, to be honest with you. But I was trying to say, give me a couple of names, because I was like, out of the list of names, how do you narrow it down? And I was wrecking my head, and I just got a block. I was like, someone help me with this part. So once I got part that part, the rest would just flow down me then.
Yeah.
And I got it done in the day.
He texts me as well. He goes, what flats are you from? But I was flying to Lima. And whatever way the Wi-Fi works on the plane, you can use it, but only for messages.
Yeah.
So nothing was loading up on Instagram, but I'd get an Instagram message, and I could only reply to it. And when you pull down and you reply, so I pulled down and he goes, what flat's you from? And I was like, it's a fucking weird message. And I was like, Lords, but it auto-corrected the loudest.
Loud,
So I'm from Lord's House. So I said, like, loudest house.
Yeah.
And I sent, and then I didn't hear from Eddie for the rest of the flight. And I was like, what the fuck's that all about? Because I thought you were with somebody, and they were questioning you about me or something. So I'm on the flight to Emparo. I was like, what's going on here?
I was going around the gaff singing loudest house tonight. Because, like, when you're writing a line or whatever, you're trying to, like, fit it in. Because obviously there's a rhythm and the whole lot and whatever. And I was going, how do you get that into that? Because obviously I knew you were from Dards, actually, Flats. I was like, maybe I'll just go with flats. Just keep it simple, handy, like, you know what I mean? But, you know, it's funny, yeah. But then, yeah, I got stuck into it then, and then I was like, right, what could I do then? And I was like, so I was like, I started pinpricking a few zingers out, and that were thought were funny. And, yeah, it's funny, yeah. There's a bit of sticking in now.
No problem.
Really, but yeah, we can take it.
Don't get offended now, man.
Tilford's giving him a hiding after, so. Broke up, maybe. Yeah, so when we met you after the show, you showed me on notes and you had two boys from the flats and then you had about two lions after and you were like, I'm going to write this song. And I was like, yeah, just think.
You said, I'm going to hold
you. You had a few on you. I thought you were only doing it and the Jackson coming back out. You know? But, so you have the song wrote, Eddie?
I have it done, yeah.
Do you want to play it for us?
Yeah, it's in the iPad now because it's not fully in the head yet, but yeah, I'll give it a go.
Yeah, whenever you're ready.
Gear up and go loud, standing proud. Two sound lads from around the town. La la la, la la la. La 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 la. La la la, la la la. La 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 la. Yeah, just two lads from the flats. Sitting around now having a chat. Representing Dublin One. Talking bollocks all day long. Get up, podcasting all walks of life. The working class and the blue collar type. Doesn't really matter where you're from. You wear a suit, a tracksuit, or a kinky little pink top. Boys are getting down to serious tack. When we'll against them, we come all on our back. They're all started from the kitchen table. And now we go loud, would you be able? Vicar Street, the stadium, the sold out shows. Me, Hall, Martin, Eddie, Hearn, Culio. Christy, Damo, the Molly, 1-2. Versatile lads, just a name or two. And I just two lads from their flats. Sitting around now, having the chats. Representing Dublin One. Talk about leagues all day long. You're a fresh fade, sharp suits, tearing up the live shows. Teddy can hold his breath under the water, don't you know? Boys are hitting the rock, they're keeping it real. Calvin's doing a wheelie now, he's up on the back wheel. I'd rather have me man catch me on the job rather than a seen her playing with me dad's. Whoa, sunscreen, comets or ice cream. Right off in the car at the away till you get home. Press or the cupboard, plug or the stopper, jockey back, piggyback. Hip knocker, pictures of the cinema, pots of caves. Some of these folks must be smoking the hair. Nettles are stingers, we do the good singer. Talking bollocks is a podcast winner. Are they just two lads from the flats? Sitting around now having the chats. representing Dublin One. Talking bollocks all day long, you know. La la la, la la la. La 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 la. La la la, la la la. La 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 la. The tears and the laughter, the booze and the banter, no better way to spend the party a day. Get up and go loud, standing proud. Two sound lads from the flats in town, you know. Henry the 10th, invented the 10th. And sometimes you think you're just a little bit tired. You think you're 6 foot until the doctor says, now Teddy, you're definitely smaller. Hang on a minute, what do you mean? I wasn't my fault, do the ADHD. So up the flats, fuck the rats. Never let a cop across your hall door, my dear, just two lads from the flats. Sitting around now having the chats, representing Dublin One. Talking bollocks all day long, get up, just two lads from the flats. Sitting around now having the chats, representing Dublin One. Talking bollocks all day long, get up.
Don't be dirty there, you bastard.
Oh, it pissed me off laughing to that episode with Heroes. Cracked me whole, I swear to God.
Wait, like, do you know what, Eddie? The stuff you're talking about in there, and I'm forgetting that we even mentioned that.
Like,
one you said there, would you rather your man catching you on the job than playing with your dad's knob? I forgot that was a zinger.
Yeah.
Well, you was actually saying, would you rather
get caught or would you rather walk in, wasn't it?
And I was trying to make a rhyme, so.
You're doing very well.
I said, well, I hold up the knob just in case the kids are listening to it or not. Like, do you know what I mean? You'll have kids, you'd have kids going around singing out in school.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because
we're a bit of luck.
Yeah. I was here, a fella.
So you know, sound good.
I met a fella one time in O'Toole's. He was a friend of a friend, and it was around Christmas time. We were talking about, going into the kids going to do a little party pieces at Christmas and nativities and whatever, and the school rang home to say your son was singing an inappropriate song at the Christmas play, and it turned out you're singing King of the Roads.
What?
What's inappropriate about it?
Because they're saying hurling down the road at 90 miles an hour. Wow. I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah. That's a stretch, isn't it?
Yeah.
Look, I get it.
Yo, do you know what that's doing there, Eddie? That's telling a child that is a curse word and they didn't realise it was a curse word.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like hurling. They probably just think that means going fast.
Going fast, yeah.
You know what I mean? But they don't know the definition of that. Now you're like, that's what I mean. So you're making that a bigger problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By highlighting it, you know what I mean?
That's a belt, by the way.
It's mad, yeah.
So that's going to be on Spotify in a few weeks, is what you're telling us. I'll be putting that on my stories and all.
We're going to record it. The gaffer just showed up on the meow yoke.
Yeah, we'll have that on my stories and all.
Stick it on the album now with the band version.
Yeah. Me sitting in the gap or something, just having me dinner, taking the picture of me dinner with that song playing.
Have you any singers, boys?
Yeah, I think I'm going to start asking everyone this one now.
The one you asked on the 6 o'clock?
Yeah. What do you think? Are you into it?
Yeah, I like it, yeah. No, I don't like it.
But it's a good singer.
Yeah, it's a good singer, yeah.
Eddie, Crips, Jellies, Chocolate. One of them has to go.
Crips, Jellies, Chocolate. Crips.
Crips. All.
Why'd you say that so easy?
They just do their teeth now.
Yeah. So does Jellies.
So does Chocolate.
That is at the pull-out. Chocolate, yeah, it can be a bit like in the teeth. But you know, I love chocolate out of the fridge with a cold cup of milk.
When I have chocolate out of the fridge, I get cravings for a glass of milk.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what it is. My brain's just like, I'd be like, lovely with this.
Like 12 o'clock at night, you know. I'm mad for eating in the night time, which I shouldn't be. Like, but
I'm a cunt for it as well. Like,
lift it over.
Yeah.
Bars of chocolate and cups of milk and all that. And you know what I love doing? It was really weird, speaking of milk. You know, I have a cup of tea and the cup's still hot. I love hard and cold milk in it.
What?
I love putting cold milk in it for some reason. And if you have a pair of chocolate there, it's even better.
So you're getting rid of Crips, Eddie, yeah?
Well, there's not a lot of Crips I like.
Yeah.
I'm partial now, packing a salt vinegar, I'm having a few points.
Right.
My nanny used to always do that. I'd say Crips.
What Crips are you missing, boys?
Oh, do you know what I love? Do you know the posh Crips, the O'Donnell's ones?
Yeah, they're nice.
Oh, they're fucking... That's how you know you're doing all right. You know when you're having them?
Now, mind you, do you know what I done the other night, actually? I got Doritos into a bowl, right?
Yeah.
And I was at the
cheese.
Yeah, it had the cheese sauce, right? And I just heated it up in the microwave, the Doritos one, and the salsa. And then at the end, it's like little crisps that are too small, and you get your fingers in and all, right? Yeah. So the following evening, what I done was I crunched them all up. and I poured in the cheese sauce and the salt and I mixed it all up and just had it with a spoon.
Yeah.
Bingo.
Yeah. So you can't do that if you get rid of the crips?
No, yeah.
Or a good crip shambone. A
good crip.
Oh, well, in fairness now, yeah. Now you have me taken.
Do you ever get the... Now, do you know that the old bacon fries that you get in the pub, not them, but Tato have their own version of them. They come in the big bag.
Yeah.
So the big bag of Tato bacon fries or the party mix, they're all gone. Skips are gone. Hula hoop is gone.
I do like those other ones, not the bacon fries. What's the other one?
Party
scampi.
Mix.
Scampi.
Oh, the scampi ones, them ones.
Many fingers.
Do you know what I'm telling you? Do you know what I'm thinking about, boys? I swear to God, for Easter, I'd vote, if there was a vote, get rid of chocolate and put crips in. So you get like a crip hamper.
For years on this podcast.
A crip hamper?
Yeah, do you know what you get? Like an Easter egg. So you get a Kit Kat one, you get the Kit Kat egg in a bar. But a crip one, so you get like a big crip or something.
A pack of crisps.
Yeah.
All right.
But like, the egg is a crip?
Just, I don't know, or just some variety
one
of that.
Big crip. So you get the Kit Kat cup and you get the egg in the cup.
Yeah, and then you get a bar.
Like a Tato in the thing and it's a Tato in it.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? If I got into government, that's what I'd be pushing for.
So you'll give up chocolate?
I don't know.
It's a tricky one, isn't it?
It is tricky. Have you ever seen that for us, Eddie?
Before I answer, all I know, Eddie, all I know is jellies are safe. That's all I know. It's between chocolate and
cream. I love jellies now.
Jellies are safe.
Yeah.
What's your favourite? Squashies, obviously, yeah.
I don't know.
Damn drumstick squashies, Eddie.
Any pick a mix.
Lollies?
Yeah.
Mm. No. I love the pig's heads. And I love an old fizzy jelly.
So do I, yeah.
Yeah, fizzy jellies. Just get the out.
Mad, isn't it? Look, I was looking at the charts earlier on. We're the number one podcast in Ireland. We're sitting here talking about jellies.
It's what the people want to know.
That's the great thing about it.
It's what people want to know. Okay.
We are robbing the listeners.
The fucking diary of a CEO. So, Eddie, tell us how you got so successful. Well, my father, this. No, what's your favourite jelly?
Well, I was talking to a friend of mine, Shane, does bring me, if I get taxis anywhere or that, and he brings me to town. And last night, I was showing him a little snippet of the song and all, and I was explaining to him, and he listened to the show as well. And he was saying, oh, that's perfect.
Yeah.
Like, they're all the things like hats and capes and all, like, you know what I mean?
Mm.
The likes of that, everybody has that conversation. Like,
it's very creative, that song. The amount of singers that you have, that we did, like Calvin said there earlier on, like, I forgot half of them.
Yeah.
I was like, we asked them.
Yeah. Because he had to make them up, didn't he?
That's bad. But I just went through, I was going through the page and flicking through bits of bobs and flicking through episodes and all and just jotting stuff down. And then once you have it all together, It's just like a puzzle then, you know what I mean? To see how you fix which clicks where and what fits where to rambles with the music sort of thing.
Look, so Eddie, you said you've listened to a couple of episodes, so you probably know the gist at this stage.
Yeah.
So with every guest, we like to take it back to the start. So if you want to take us back to the start, where are you from? What was life like growing up?
I'm originally from Coolock, Riverside, a place called Riverside, and I moved out there when I was 14. I'm actually one stop short of being a traveller, I'd say, because then we moved to Cabra, and then my mum moved to Kells, then I moved to the Fisbury, and then I moved to Donamead, and now I'm back in Coolock.
Whoa.
So I've done a little bit of moving around. Yeah, so I went to do my secondary school in Cabra Tech, and so I was into music, but never played that. And I tried to learn the guitar a couple of times as a kid, but I didn't know what I was doing sort of thing. And then I was going into DJing, doing a bit of DJing and that, and had the records, the decks and all, and that was my big thing. I wanted to be a DJ. Then my first daughter was born when I was 21, so I was kind of spending a lot of time out in home ass house and all, so I couldn't really bring the decks into home ass house and whatever. So I was doing a media course at the time called the My Project, and there's a lot of lads who are musicians, and they were younger than me, and they were very good, and I was mad interested in writing songs. Well, I liked the idea of writing songs, and I was into dance music. And I just jotted this scribble down one day, and I shouted to one of the lads, I said, can you put music to it? And he said to me, you should learn a couple of tunes and a couple of chords of the guitar to help you bring music, you know, to your writing or whatever. So anyway, with that, one of the lads should have shown me all this fancy stuff, and I was like, yeah, whatever. And the other fella said, no, here, do this, two fingers, Zombie by the Cranberries. And I got the hang of it after half an hour, and I played that for about 2 weeks till my fingers nearly fell off. And I got the buzz for it then. And then I started just trying to learn songs. And then between, when you were learning the guitar at the start, it's hard to try and sing and play the guitar when you're only learning it. Mm-hmm. So I didn't sing really, I just made up little melodies.
Did you always know you could sing though?
No. And how I discovered I could sing was, well, I was at that, I always fancied myself, like, in my nanny's at Christmas, it was always a sing song, you know. And my Uncle Thomas was a great ballad singer, my granny was a great singer. Kids weren't allowed in the kitchen, but I used to sneak into the kitchen at Christmas and hide on the table and all, just to hear these all singing, you know. And I probably wanted to be a singer just to sing in my granny's at Christmas, really, more so than that. And but yeah, I remember sitting in that my project one day and learning Spancel Hill, and whatever the key I was playing in, I knew by my ear I was in tune. I remember running home, I could sing, and it was like, yeah, whatever. But I knew in my head, like, I was at the hit note, correct now. And then, from then on, and then, like, my first ever gig was in Joxa Daly's.
On Dorsey Street.
Yeah, I have a Monday, and I bricked myself down there, drank about... I had about four bottles, large bottles of bonus.
You brick yourself going into Joxa's anyways.
Well, here, I'll give you a funny one, because it's funny about music. A lad we know, he's away on a long, long holiday at the minute, you know?
All right.
Doing a bit of walk, isn't he?
He's doing a bit of walk.
I'm all good.
And he was me and him were arch enemies. Like, if Dars actually flats, every time he seen me, he wanted to box the head off me. Swear to God, right? We did a couple of digging matches as well. And I think it was my second night in Joxa's, and he walks in the door. I was like, oh, good luck. And it's not like I was already nervous as I was. Somebody comes up to me, gives me a big hug at the end of the gig, you're facing an angel. And ever since that, we are best mates. You know? So people that you never liked become your friends because they like your singing and all, man. Yeah. You know?
So, did you ever walk? Did you walk before?
I've walked in factories. I worked in a factory. The last job I had before I was doing the music was I worked in a photo centre. I've done photography as well in college. And I've done a bit of video and stuff like that. So in that, my project was film production, photography and video. Yeah. So you do three modules in it.
So you're always into the creative kind of stuff, the art.
I always like making stuff, you know, even in school and art and stuff. Now, we didn't really do a lot of art, but like if you got to the tension, you got to do art, you know, and I loved that part of it. But I was always into making things and the writing songs I kind of love, you know. It's good. It's great crack. Like, see, like that song, the song I wrote for you, I'd say. You get an idea when a talk comes to your head and you're writing your phone. It's great to play in it, like, especially if you're doing something about history. I like history. You have to do your research into the, like, I wrote a song about Michael Collins. You do your research about him and different things like that. And then I wrote a song about the Stardust there only recently. And like, I've been singing at that Stardust for the last couple of years, probably 9 or 10 years, just at the vigil, but there was nobody even going to it, really, which was sad in itself, other than the family members. And the last few years I've been singing the Christy Moore song. And, like, somebody asked me to write a song about him, and I thought it was already done. And they suggested, no, the song was just happening then with the new inquest and all that carry on. So I sat down and done my research into it and got really stuck into it, like, you know. And wrote that song. That's what I love about that. But yeah, no, sorry, the job was, yeah.
Just as well, you're going to play that song for us in a couple of minutes, aren't you?
It's
a belter, yeah. I only heard it recently as well when you put it out, and I was like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, like, man. The family's all actually really liked it, in fairness, you know, which was great.
Must have felt good, Eddie, coming from the area. Well, that's being able to do, like, give it a voice.
Yeah, because, like, I wasn't even born the start this happened. I'm born in 1983, that happened in 1981. But you see, I have friends who are related to this.
Yeah.
Either people that died or people that were affected by it. And the gas thing about it, what made me more want to write the song when you realise the ripple effect. So, sadly enough, 48 people perished in the fire, over 200 injuries, some very badly burned. And not only that, like I know a lady, she was on the show there that was on RTE recently about the documentary or about the Stardust, and Phyllis is her name. And she was a lounge girl at that time, and like she was saying to me, like, there's things like the blue skips that you see in pubs, you put the bottles in, like, when she sees them freaks are out and all, the sound of wood crackling, right? And she never forgets the time. She was only 16 or something, 15 or 16. She came out of the fire. She luckily got out of the fire. And she said, I never forget with the silence. It was going from chaos and roar and scream and fire to just the silence. Which that meant anybody was still in there.
Was gone,
like, do you know what I mean?
Jesus Christ.
Some of the victims, like, there was like it's a heavy one, right? I was really listening to the podcast about it. I knew a lot about it anyway. Researched all, a lot of the pen portraits. Anything I could watch, even the old drama that was on the telly from years ago that RTE made as well, like, with the actors and all in it, you know? And, I've grown up around it all my life. It's literally down the road from my house. Yeah. I seen Charlie Hartley torn the start the park, you know, the way they torn the soil. I seen that. I was there when that happened. I was there seeing Christy Moore sing outside a couple of times and all. And yeah, being from the area, and like, no disrespect to Christy, but like, he's from the country. The fact that, and actually one of the family had said that to me, the fact that you're from the area and you sound like you're from the area,
I think it's a lot more meaningful then, do you know what I mean? And like, I think they deserved it, you know? And that's, but yeah, that ripple effect, man, is nuts.
Yeah.
Like people, there's been suicides, people going to tablets with drink, people that weren't even born, but they were in the family of someone deceased.
Generational cycle.
Yeah, like, Mrs. McDermott lost three kids, you know.
I seen there's a girl and she was orphaned from it. A man that was there that night and died. Robbie G just be sharing stuff. There's someone in his family who died that night as well.
Yeah.
And obviously, like, he's bleeding younger than us, so he'd never met that person, but he knows the effect it's having on his family and the story's been passed down. And then, because it was only recently enough with the inquest there a few weeks ago, my dad was telling me, like, my dad lived in the flats that I lived in growing up. And he was telling me that he remembers the night you could see the smoke.
Yeah.
And that happened in R10.
Yeah. Like, that's...
Fucking lived in Sean McDermott Street and you could see the smoke.
Sure, man, what was this? Even remember, Charlie Board mentions where he didn't really know where he was going when he got the call to go over. But he said, you could just follow the ambulances out. And then he could see the smoke and the glow before you got there. Do you know what I mean? And that's the mad thing about that. Like, whatever that first inquest was done compared to the second one, whatever, but like, people had documented and said, I seen that fire at 1:15. But the people in the disco didn't know what happened till 1:30. And a lot of the stuff was all overlooked at the time and all. So if you actually sat down and added it all up, because you know now how the fire started, and then the hot press up the back, kind of, so let's say, for per se, the ceiling was on fire before the underneath, and then they had these, tiles. And like, your man had these, these carpet tile things on the wall. Right, and they weren't really allowed for the planning and all that, and they were highly flammable and would have affected a lot, make the fire be bigger than it was and such, as well as everything else.
Yeah.
Horrendous stuff, man.
Was it emotional writing the song?
Yeah, I had to get up and walk around the computer one day and I said to myself, Jesus Christ, if this is making me feel real, fucking hell. They're doing this more than I'm alive.
Yeah.
Like, all the family, Keegan's and McDermott's, all the other families and McDonald's, they're living this whole thing. Like, I know two girls that twins, their father lost a brother. He was one of the Buckleys, Jimmy Buckley. Their father died, I think he was 40 something or something like that. He was young enough, heart attack, but stress.
Yeah.
Like Anthony Keegan's father, he died of cancer and he was a massive advocate at the start and all, and started up the committee and stuff like that. He died of cancer in 50-something, but they say cancer comes on with stress as well. So a lot of things has happened since that fire, other than the actual burning of the, you know what I mean?
There's that night, and there's everything after, all the trauma.
Yeah.
And it's not even, it's the fight. You're fighting, you're knocking on doors when people are saying no.
Yeah.
When you know it should be a yes, you know what I mean? So it's not just, sorry you lost a loved one, and you move on. It's like, no, we're fighting for this injustice that's happening.
Yeah.
I've seen something that Christy Moore was the only one that's actually ever prosecuted in relation to that, of a defamation, wasn't it?
Defamation, because they were lying in his ears and he had the banner. He put that in a record and all, had to pull it. You can't look, the people that were in that fire that survived, let's say, right, when he'd done the first inquest, like, they were coming in, like, and if you had burns, get down to your jocks and sit there and be judged like a piece of shit,
It's actually, do you know what, when I was looking into what's giving me shades of, like, what I really get is when you look at the inquest into the Hillsborough.
Yeah.
It's nearly identical of how they handled it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And there's families constantly, like, when was Hillsborough, 30-something years ago?
Yeah.
And this is 40-something years ago, and you're like, it's identical. And when you look at the people that perished in it, they're probably cut from the same cloth. You know, a working class people.
That's what it is. I think that's what it is, And even Charlie Board says it as well, like, if this had happened then when Donnybrook and not Bonnybrook, it'd be well sorted by now. Like, I mean, when they built the Memorial Park at Coolock, which is a nice idea, there's 48 pillars goes around the fountain and in the middle is a man and a girl dancing. No, that's because it was a big dance night on that night, like it was a dance competition or whatever. And I just can't understand why that wasn't put up where the bloody fire was.
Yeah, so I only moved out that way 2.5 years ago. I drive by that park every day. And I thought that's where it was. Initially, I thought where it was. Yeah. And a friend of mine told me, no, well, he goes, that's the Memorial Park. But it happened in R10.
Yeah, and it's funny you're saying that because my mate lives right across the road, Marie. And I was going down to collect my car out of his gaff when I was at the leave the car after it was a party or whatever. And a car pulled in and says to me, do you know where the Stardust is? I said, now you're looking for the memorial or the actual
site. And she had the site. So she did the exact same thing. She was dropping off flowers. So like I had made a little video of the, for the song, to accompany the song, obviously. And I went up to the place a few times and sat my car just in the place. And just like, and I have a drone and I flew the drone around it. Like I use a bit of the drone shot where you come into the actual thing they have now on the walls. Lovely. They originally just had this like a play with all the names and the picture of the fountain. And now they have this lovely big huge thing with a picture of every single person that was in the fire and a little message and that. And there's a little thing about Charlie Board is on it as well. And it's lovely.
Mm.
And he Charlie Board, he was a great advocate over the years. God rest him. And he unveiled it as well. I had to put his name in the song because he was like, do you know what I mean? He get them a good voice and that. And like, I was at the last vigil and they asked me to sing Christy's song, you know. And I got up and done it and I got a stand ovation and all, which I was shocked. Because I just do it because it's just give them a dig out, like, do you know what I mean? And I believe in the cause and what have you. And I grew up and lashed it out of it. And just, I had something just, you know, when you have this, when you passionately sing a song, like you get into it or whatever. And I got a stand ovation, like, and which actually made me very emotional. And they presented me with a canvas with all the names on it and all. And Charlie Wood was there as well, Charlie. Like, that was the last time he was going to be there. Like, and like, he died not that long ago, like, you know what I mean? Which is sad that he didn't get to hear. But look, even there's loads of them that have died, parents and that never knew about whether this was going to happen or not, like, and all. And like, to hear the cheer, I seen a video of the cheer in the courtroom.
Yeah.
Like, it makes you cry, Neil.
What, it was 43 years ago 43 this year? That's a long time.
It's a long, like I said, I'm 40.
Yeah.
So, that's going on. Like, I can't remember when I was 4.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or when I was 3. So, it's probably about like 4 or 5 more years that I don't remember. But they remember every single one of them. Every second of every day that's been going on. And how they were treated, like the money thing and all. Yeah, there's money now. Don't tell anybody what you got.
Yeah.
You know, just carry on. And Morris threatened them not to try and take it any further or anything like that. If you took the money, you couldn't then go make a case at all. People hadn't got the money then.
Yeah,
they were all working class people, like, and it was like somebody dragged a big grey cloud over Coolock nearly, like Coolock, Edenmore, all them areas, because everybody on the east on the road knew everybody. Everybody was close knit, looked after each other, and like, you know, and like the funerals, how many funerals? Like, you lay up 48 people in a row. And just think about
it. Some of them are from the same family.
Yeah. Some was three, some was two.
Do you know what I mean?
Some people were unidentifiable. Some of them were told, like, you know, better off remembering them as they were. So, that, like, all he found was, let's say, a watch, and a piece of jewellery, and an item of clothing. God loved us, just one of two bodies that were fused together. Like, they were, like, arm in arm. So we like, kind of putting your arm around each other. Yeah, well, holy God, help us, or whatever like that. So I think it was Anthony Cleary, his horse, two sisters perished in the fire, and then another lady that was with them. And I think Anthony said something with the white top she was wearing, was how somebody must have seen her through the door, and the smoke went over and grabbed the hole and dragged her out. But there was bars on the windows and all.
And they locked the emergency exits.
All the medals, emergency. Now, there was somebody was saying there was the chain was draped over and all that, but they showed the thing, they don't approve the thing to say, look, if you had the thing draped, you meant to push it, it's still gonna, seconds are vital in situations like this, do you know what I mean? And chain doors were locked, doors were like, your man, there's a video your man sees, like when these fired investigators, and you see there's two doors, and one's black and one's kind of nearly white, and he could says this thing proved that there was something in front of this door, that's why it's not black like that door. So why do you have that, and you know, blocking an exit? Steel on the back of the toilet windows and all, because apparently what you call it, people are handing drink through and stuff like that. People used to open the doors to let their mates in and all this carry on. But the probable arson thing I thought was gas, like, it's either it was or it wasn't. You know what I mean? Like, but it's just, there's a lot of covering up there.
There's a lot of corners cut where there was, like, and again, like, all I know about it is from, like, this inquest and a couple of friends that tell me. And the friends are only telling me because they heard, like, they're not old enough to live it. And, like, even, as I said there, I didn't even know where the actual thing happened. So for anyone that doesn't know, the R10 roundabout, there's a petrol station there. Point that petrol station, it was in there.
Yeah.
So people are probably driving past it every day.
Yeah, because you can go into a two-way, so then if you were facing the petrol station, that wasn't there. It was actually only saying it the other day. Imagine that petrol station was there at the time. The whole area would have went up in smoke, like, you know what I mean? Because it was so close. But anyway, that was a little field at the time or a little small green. But you can go down either side of it. And again, the video we have, you can see where they're all standing together. That's the whole footprint of the fire, like. You know what I mean? It's actually pretty big. And it was meant to be the biggest, coolest nightclub in the town at the time.
It wasn't supposed to be a nightclub, wasn't it?
No, it was originally a jam factory.
Yeah.
And then they converted it into like a pub and... But there was loads of things like...
There's a lot of corners cut in it. A lot of things that shouldn't have been done that were done on their behalf. That showed the statute of limitation was on them. Their boarding approval was on them. They show that they were fit for purpose. But
Yeah, there's about five things that they didn't get. You know, I think like it says in one of the inquest that like those DSB had been called about wires or some wording and they were meant to fix it and it hadn't been fixed. And apparently, you know, when the tickets like the fire department go, the fire brigade go, and you know, the fire inspector or whatever, he'd been in the venue one night and it was too hard to move around, he thought. And there was chains on the yokes, and your man said, "No, I'll look after that," or whatever. Sure, the fucking, what was it, a couple of weeks later, 2-3 months later, they spent up in fire, you know, over the faulty wording thing, and the doors were still locked. Like, you know, like it's sad, very, very sad. And you can see the heartache of the people, like, you know, you can see, like, they've lived through it every day of their life. Man, like, imagine waking up in a nightmare and having to get up every day and look at yourself in the mirror and go through all that, carry on, and then the scars you have alone are reminding you, like, you know, like, but Jimmy Fitzpatrick was saying, like, in one of the interviews, his hands are very badly burned, like, he's lost knuckles and tendons and all. And he was saying he had to get a star to help him wipe his arse and all, like, you know. After it all happened, it was that sort of, like, that hard to deal, like. That's the sort of thing you're left with the rest of your life, like, you know.
So, you wrote a song, Eddie.
Yeah.
You want to play it for us?
Yeah, we'll give it a go, yeah.
On a cold night in February 1981, in a nightclub called the Stardust, a fire had begun. People from the neighbourhood seen the flames light up the sky, while the young folk on the dance floor, oblivious at the time. Fire raged and the lights went out, it was hard to find the doors. The place filled up with a thick black smoke, all the panic screams and roars. Fire in the Stardust, they 48 young lice, and the hundreds of survivors still haunted by the night. These were ordinary working class young people at the ball, families living happy lives till that dreaded call. Left to live in emptiness, the anger, hurt and shame. Who in the name of Jesus let the fire exit shame? Ever since that awful night, it's never been the same. Oh, the nightmares don't go away, reminded every day. Over 40 years of torture, stigma, hurt and shame. Let these families fall apart and no one got to blame. And they'll never give up fighting for all of those who died. The families, the warriors who suffered since that night. And they never give up fighting till the truth was told. To the families, to the warriors, for the 48 young souls. I sat there and questioned your innocent demise. You branded them as arsons and destroyed so many lives. And when you dangled out the carrot, tried to gag them with your pay, tried to brush it under the carpet in a very callous way. Like a hurricane, a Stardust ripped through every family's car, wreaking havoc and devastation when the aftermath's the roar. With your cover-ups, denials, false promises and deceit, driven mad by the torment you had mothers on their knees. There was Charlie Bird that always said, because of where you're from, you should never have waited all these years for justice to be won. With your bravery and persistence, you fought a long, hard fight. The war against injustice for the 48 who died. While the angels live in heaven and the families live through hell, through every painful second, and for the truth for them to tell. And when the jury reached the verdict, oh, the verdict they all long, they said a lawful killing, but why did it take so long? And they'll never give up fighting for all of those who died. Families and the warriors who suffered since that night. And he never gave up fighting till the truth was told. To the families, to the warriors, or the 48 young souls. And he'll never give up fighting for all of those who died. Families and the warriors who suffered since that night. And he'll never give up fighting till the truth was told. To the families, to the warriors, for the 48 young souls.
Class. There's just something about song, isn't there? Do you know when you hear a song about a bleeding cause, it's just I don't know. I think it's the best medium, I think, for trying to get a message across. Do you know what I mean?
Like, as well, like the other side of the song, there's other people who've written songs actually, because I actually have to see the day after the inquest, two people had put up songs. Well, the fella I know, John Henshaw, wrote a song, and another fella I know, and well, I was waiting to see. I had the song written, let's say. And it was like written or wrote.
This is singer.
There you go. But yeah, I had the song written and I had just like a temporary verse at the end because I didn't know the inquest kind of bit buzz yet. And I sent it to Anthony Keegan to ask her just what she think, because I know Anthony. Just in case I was offending anybody or not, more so than anything. And she said, yeah, it'd be great if you can get some of the inquest into it. So we waited and we got the inquest and. Oh, yeah, I was at coming home. I was at being away with the kids out in Paris with, you know, Euro Disney and whatever. And I was in my ma's. I was dying to get to home and get stuck into it, like, you know. By the time I got home, my head was all over the gaff. But then I got it all done and we fixed it and it all makes sense. But basically, let's say the start of the song of Christy Morrow, that's about then. This about now. So it makes more sense, if you get me. Not that there's anything wrong with Christy's song because I sang it for years, but it makes more sense.
Yours is more current.
Well, current, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And, well, yeah, no, it's. I'm actually very proud of it, in fairness, because it's like people ask me far about writing, and I said no, because I just thought, as I said, I thought it was done. It's mad how you think sometimes, you know. Even like that Michael Collins song, or no, a fella asked you to write one, and I wouldn't go near it, because I just know there's barely, I think there's one song about Michael Collins, and then I said, no, I won't go near that, because you'd be just putting your hand up to be slapped. Somebody just gone, well, you got this wrong and you shouldn't be doing this, and he was a traitor and he was this and la, 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 all that crap. So but this fellow, you know, Marcus Howard, was doing these documentaries called East Horizon Stories, and he needed a song that he could, so I wrote that for him, and he loved it and whatever, and I have it on my album now as well. So but I got it all right. The content of the lyrics and all tells a good story kind of from his perspective, like, yeah. Do you know what I mean? But it took me ages to sort of change my mind and wanting to do a kind of thing, like, which is weird.
Yeah.
Show me an interview with his nephew, grandnephew, and he's the image of him, and then something just clicked him.
Yeah.
That was that thing.
Well, it's good that what you were saying, now you educate yourself on something that you never knew about. Like.
Yeah.
Come here, Eddie, we skipped ahead a little bit.
Yeah.
In your story, you told us about your first gigs and joxers and stuff like
that.
Where does it go up in there with the music?
So like, I remember I done John Joxus, and I was doing that for about a year, I'd say. I remember one day, actually, I remember being in Joxus after the parade one year, right? I swear to God, standing at the jocks, looking at the lads playing the music, and I said to my mister, said, I'd love to do that. And a year later, I was sitting in that seat down there. And from then on, I was like, going, you can do that. And I decided to put a tattoo on my hand just to remind myself that you're going to be a musician, and don't forget that. And that was kind of like a promise to myself.
Are you big into this visualisation, Eddie? Because it seemed to be like that as well when I rang you about the coming on the show, and you're like, I knew you were going to ring me. And I was like, all right.
I told him you were going to ring.
Oh, did you? Oh, yeah, you bastard.
No, I suppose it's like, no, only recently, really. Only recently, when you look back at things and you realise that you'd said that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And like, I'm not a mad advocate for a manifestation, but I think sometimes it does work when you think about it. Like, I've been playing the guitar at a gig. I'm a fecker for breaking strings, right? But the minute you think about it, bang, you break a string. Or you'll be sitting there in the middle of singing and I'll be going, but don't be thinking about the strings. And I won't break one and I walk steady sometimes, you know what I mean? But so after that then, after Joxers, then I decided to focus on writing the music. I was doing kind of like ballads and stuff like that. And then I focused on the writing stuff. And then we wrote All Around the Town. That was the first proper big song ever though. And then that was used to love, hate and stuff like that. And then I said, there's something working here, you know. People licked onto it. And that was about a fella who was murdered out there, like Warden O'Connor, first person I ever knew to be murdered, which is a weird thing anyway. And just before all the gangland stuff was going on in Dublin or anything like that.
It's a common thing though, isn't it? Well, like, I think we all know somebody.
Yeah.
Who, ah, yeah.
Well, but we shouldn't, though.
Yeah, exactly. He was the first, like, and the more that song ages, as in it's how old it is, the more it makes sense now, which is really weird.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. That song is so relevant now.
Mm.
Like, so relevant.
So, so relevant. Like, I mean, it was gas. I got heard of Carl Macknor, the DJ. Mm. He's out there doing a remix. And I'm out there doing a video for him. Shot bits of it, he's in it and we're in it and all that. And when we're going to release the song, was the day after, we had to plan it on Spotify, yeah? It was the day after that kid got stabbed in Parnell Square. So we held off really on putting it, going too far with it. Like, we just couldn't, we couldn't change it on Spotify. We just left it be, sort of thing. We didn't want to be offending anybody or anything. But that's just mad, I thought.
Yeah.
The timing of that, like, alone.
What was that like, being in Love Hay? How did that come about?
So, you know, when Love Hay came out and everybody was all got mad about it, I didn't watch the first season.
Mm.
And I'm one of those where I'd be a bit like you, I don't see films until like 10 years later and it's on Channel 4 or something at Christmas, you know. I'm not a big cinema buff or anything like that. But, yeah, I think someone sent me your song and be cool and that. And I think it was the second or third season I started watching it just to see what it was all about. I said, oh, Jesus, it would actually. So we were hounding people to try and get an email address or whatever, and one of the lads knew someone who drove a truck for a film company or whatever, got his two producers, David Caffrey and your woman. I can't think of your woman's name. She wrote back the usual, oh, we get this all the time, and la, 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 la. David Caffrey wrote back, love it. You know, send it over and all. So I was like, all right, cool. And then I was like, I said to the boys, yeah, send the CD. There might be something else to like, you know what I mean? And it worked. So we recorded this kind of bluesy version of the Mero. Now, the mayor's mad, somebody's under the bed, whoever can it be, and I done this bluesy version, something different, like, and they used it, so that opened up, that was opening up an episode, I think it was season six, what was it, episode six or whatever, season four, episode six, so the mayor now opens up one of the episodes, where the two addicts are on the ground, that's when you hear all around the town, but, so basically, Love Hay, or the people that would make Love Hay, could use any music they want in the world, on the island of Ireland. Where they have to pay big money for it. And to do a DVD, it's gone worldwide then. So they had to change the music. So that's how I got my little slot on the DVD. So people in Australia and America were hearing my air music on the DVD, but you wouldn't have seen it on RTE.
Yeah.
I remember John Connor saying to me, oh, he's gone mad, he didn't put it on the telly, because he should have. It's a great song.
So your song is not played on the telly, but it's on the DVD?
Yeah. So, yeah, it's like a blank agreement, license or something like that it's called. So, yeah.
So if I go back now to the RTE player, can I hear your song on it?
I don't think so. I think you hear, like, because it's all like Rolling Stones and songs like that. And then if you were to go, like, if they were to put that on a DVD, they'd have to pay a big license fee for that and all, for copyright and all. So little bands like us, like, you know, I just put them on and that. So, but it done a world of good for us. We got a bit of a following in Australia. Was people, you know, it was Shazam and their telly and hearing those. And so we done well out of that in a sense. But yeah, so with that, all around the town. And I just kept writing songs. And then I kind of got, like, the lads, I set up the band with lads years ago, friends and all, but everybody was getting real jobs and all. I was still the only one doing the music, you know. I didn't want to have a job, I just wanted to be a musician. And we just kept at it. And then the band sort of fell apart at one stage. And then we kind of reformed it with a few lads that we started playing music with. And they were like, just use your own name, like, you know. So I done that. And then I had an album recorded just before the lockdown. And the more I was listening to it, the more I was like, when it wasn't sitting with me, like, you know what I mean? So I wanted to try something new. So I went and restarted it again and with another fella. And I loved what he was doing with the songs and all. That's Damo, that played me guitarist. He recorded and mixed and mastered, produced it, all that carry on. And done a very good job. And I loved the way he was bringing the songs on that I couldn't bring them on, if you get me. But before all that happened, then I'd written that song, King of the Road, about the horses, which I never thought in a million years would have went anywhere. And that just took off like a horse.
Is that your biggest song, Eddie?
At the minute, yeah. That's like...
It's fucking huge.
The chord intro to it is deadly.
Little, you know, yeah, that was just a little
And nearly, do you know what? You can nearly visualize a horse because it starts off slow and it starts trotting and then it gets
that's
gets
not the
going
pace.
And you
that's
get the rhythm.
That little pace of the horse. Yeah. That's the whole idea of it. Now, like, we recorded for the album. When you play it live, you play it faster than you do in the on the CD or you hear it on Spotify. Look, I just recorded that in my bedroom. There was, no, that was not in, in any big studio or anything. And I had like a my foot stop thing and a little tambourine and played a bit of bass over on the keyboard and that. And like I was watching the documentary with the boys that do that racing. And I was like, these are all mad.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, because
where they do block off a motorway and have a fucking race. They are head cases.
I didn't know they'd done this. Because you'd seen them on the N22. I just thought the boys going for a trot in the daytime, hold up the traffic for the crack. Do you know what I mean?
Not having
but
a race.
They were going out racing in the morning time and all.
You ever see it there?
No, we've never seen this boy.
You'd be driving down, now not the M1, but like another blatant country road. Yeah, dual carriageway, big road, You'd be driving, the next while you'd meet traffic, but it'd be a line of three or four cars on a two-lane.
You come down off the ramp, right? So the horses come along, they go down at the ramp and all the vans and all the jeeps come
behind
them.
So they spread out on the road so no one can overtake them. And in front of that line of traffic then, two fellas racing horses. But they'd be on what do they call the two-wheel?
Sulkies.
So they're racing each other.
When you come down onto the Jowla, so let's say the bridge is coming in front of you. From that bridge to the next bridge, to let's say the race. That's the length of the race.
So you see all the... I've never knew this.
You know,
now, and the amount of times I've listened to that fucking song.
Did you ever see the video? Did you ever see the video of it for King of the Road?
Yeah,
right. You'll see a part they're up on the top of the bridge over the Jewel Carriageway because all the boys be sitting there cheering them on like as they're coming underneath and all. So I watched that documentary and I was watching it on the telly and I wrote with my phone, hearing down the road at 90 mile an hour because remember years ago. Oh, the Rob Carver town, it was 90 mile an hour.
Yeah.
It's just a tour of phrase.
Yeah.
And actually got a comment on YouTube the other day. I was like, oh, mate.
Horses don't run 90 miles an hour or something.
Yeah. It was like, did anybody know the horse only doing 25 or 40? Like, it's a great song, he said. And I was like,
backhanded compliment.
Yeah. I just wish it was now to tour of phrase. It's not an actual factual thing. Like, do you know what I mean?
There's no one there to speak on.
But every horse in the song is a real horse. Because, like, so when I watched it, and I was watching loads of races, right, on YouTube and all this, but I knew nothing about it, you know, and I asked loads of lads, and eventually got a hold of Thomas Clark, right, lives up in Cabaret, does all, loads of horses Tom has, he's been on horses all his life, and does the funerals and all sorts like that, and I spent 2 weeks voice noting back and forth, what's the things around the legs called, they're called hobbles and stuff like that, what's the other, you know, oh, just because I know nothing about horses, I think I was on a horse once in my life. And, excuse me, he was telling me all about these horses. And so basically, in the race, there's a bloodline, or in the horses, or in the sound, there's a bloodline as well.
Yeah.
So the Chip and Pin of the Indian was the fastest or the biggest road race ever, right? And the Chip and Pin was winning everything, and so was the Indian horse, right? And when they get a horse that's good, they breed off the horse. Yeah. So people, after they came out of the Chip and Pin, went nowhere, and after now the Indian is all in the song. Right, so even though Chip and Pin won the big race, the Indian was the one most successful for siring fouls or whatever. So next time I was going, all I had to do was get the name, the time he won the race at, and more or less where it was. So I wrote itself nearly like.
Yeah.
So I sent it back to Clarker, right, and he gets back and he says, I said, do you mind me putting your name right just in case he didn't? And he said, that's all right, sound whatever. All right, no big deal. And then about a week later, he's actually saying, that's flying all over the internet. And I was like, what? And I went onto Facebook, and it was like 40,000 fucking whatever viewers. I was like, you weren't meant to send it to anybody, like.
Yeah.
And I fucked up the verses in it as well, like. Somebody made a stupid video where, like, the Indian horse is in it now, but the video wasn't really great. I said, fuck it, anyway, I'm going to have to go and make a video now. So I got bits of footage and put it all together and made up the video. So I know how this is how algorithm thing works, right? So, and I said, right, if you put it up the last time around, me now, I sent them back to him in WhatsApp. I said, yeah, go on, put that on your page, because he's a horsey fella. A shot around then. So if I had to put it on my page, they know it's from me.
Yeah.
Because he's had to put it up. Facebook were kind of a bit asleep at the wheel, I think. And I'm sure, because he still has more views on his page than my would on the band page. Plus, he has more horsey friends than I would as well.
Yeah.
But I don't know, the kids that sing that song is nuts. It's great. Yeah. Like, people were sending me videos. From the lockdown up to now, saying, like, oh, my little nephew Johnny's 4,
and he sings your song and all, and he send me videos of him singing it. So I'd go to the room and record a little video of me singing a song, and I'd say, like, Terry's King of the Road, you know, change the name at the end of it for that birthday or whatever, and I send it on, like, you know.
Yeah.
And they love it, like. And then, like, it was in the Smithfield Fair the end of the week, we're trying to get footage just maybe for to put another video together for the album version of the song. And all these kids just got all, it was weird, starstruck kind of thing around me. And that man was like, this is great, because the army melt my head, and since you came along, they just shut up.
Yeah.
But it's great to see kids like that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, even young one was telling me there, one of their friends in that class, she seen a video on a Snapchat or something, and it's our friend singing King of the Road karaoke in a house party. You one didn't know I was at that. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
It's great. I love it. I think.
When did you release that song?
So I just put it onto Spotify then when I had it out, like, because the lockdown was around the same time, and we couldn't really do a hell of a lot, like, you know what I mean? And then when I started on the album the second time, and then we decided to record it with the band. So in the band version, drums and bass and banjos and whistles and stuff like that. It's cool now. It's a tiny little bit faster, but I think it's all right. Like, it's not too fast, you know? Mm. It still has that sort of gallopy, hardly feel to it, like. But, yeah, it's great. Like, and as I said, that the little car thing, what I thought was great was when I started playing in the pubs and all, like, people knew where I was the minute I did it, like.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Which, that's great, like. Great feeling, like.
The rhythm in it is playing unbelievable, and it's touching on a culture that's, we don't know, it's a culture that exists, it's just no one really looks into it. Do you know what I mean? Like, do you know, like, my miss from Wexford, she had stables growing up, she had horses. Mm. And, like, a joke is that, like, I know plenty of people who had bleeding horses, but they were out the front garden. Like, yeah, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, Ballymun, Finglas.
Ballyferma.
And then Ballyferma, yeah, I was going to say that. And then put down the country, do you know what I mean? Like, these races are going on, and a lot of people know about horses. I remember going to the Smithfield Horse Fair. Was it last Sunday or the fourth Sunday of every month?
Fourth Sunday of every month.
Down. Remember my cousins bringing me, and there's literally people howling up and down, and I'm like,
yeah.
I remember being, I was only young. I remember thinking, like, this is not Ireland.
Yeah.
I'm at the going back in time. This is legal and it's gone now. Mm. But still, the cults are still exist.
They're still going down of a Sunday, because the day I went down, there was lash rain, but it was rammed with horses and people. And I messaged the Smithfield Horse Fair page saying, look, do you mind if I go down to try and get a bit of footage of his, like, and that, you know? Because I was thinking, like, although the road racing is illegal down here, but it's not up the north. Like, the Ringsend Road and up in Derry, they block off that road for the racing for the day, you know? And Appleby over in England, they block off the roads as well and let them do it. Some people say, like, I'm not a horse. I don't know a lot about horses, but people say it's bad for them. People say it's all right for them. Some of the horses are the best kept horses in Ireland.
Yeah, serious money in it.
You know what I mean? Serious money. And like the way they look after the horses, they look at it's like the way they look after their children nearly. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Sometimes better.
Yeah, probably better as well. Like,
sure, look at Blade and Shergar got fucking kidnapped. Do you know what I mean? That's for a reason.
Yeah, for a big ransom, and then they couldn't take him. I think whatever it was.
Did he never get that horse?
No, he didn't.
Wow. It's gone.
Yeah. Apparently he went nuts or something, and then, because whoever.
Do you know, Eddie, I listened to a podcast about this, yeah? Do you remember I told you? Vanilla Ice done a podcast about this.
Feck off.
Yeah, Vanilla Ice done a podcast with the BBC about Shergar. And then someone I know, a lot older than me, said he knows somebody who knows someone, whatever. It's all hearsay. But that's what happened. The fellas who got the horse weren't horse men. And the horse started acting the bollocks and jolting and all this fucking rearing.
Yeah.
Like the blading Ferrari horse.
Yeah.
The thing got the bullet. That's what I heard.
Yeah, it got too hard to handle or something like that. Yeah. Like, and the horse goes mad, like, look, because he stand all over you.
If you're not a horse person, you know what I mean? You're going to panic. You think this horse is going to bleed and kill me. And
fuck the money.
Yeah. Well, sure, that was probably bleeding 40 years ago. And anyways, so I said, surely we're all right to talk about what happened to Shergar. Yeah, not defamation.
And it's being, what you call it, reeling in the years and all now. So that, yeah, I think it's all right. It was 1970-something, I think, or something like that, I think.
But, like, that's what I meant by that is the money involved. And, like, even when you're putting horses out the stud, once a horse gets up on a mare, whatever, that's it. Regardless of what happens, you owe that person
the money, yeah, it's mad.
This is how the Glaziers bought Man United. Yeah. Ferguson had a falling out.
Horses.
But Ferguson got given the horse, Bladen Rocker Gibraltar, or straight Rocker Gibraltar, yeah. He was given the horse, but he wasn't given the studding rights to the horse, so he had a falling out. And with that, they weren't going to buy the club, so the Glaciers came in to buy it. Lads are so much involved in horses.
No way.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I knew we had horses. I didn't know that now.
Yeah. Ed, can you look that up? Your man who used to own Rocket Gibraltar, he gave it to Ferguson. He was a kind of acquaintance of Ferguson. He gave it to him. And then the horse retired. Ferguson went to breed the horse. And your man goes, you don't own the rights to breed that horse. That's my horse. And your man who owned the horse was going to buy United. Had a big falling out over it. Your man goes, I'm not buying United. And the Glaciers come in and bought it.
No way.
That's what happened, yeah.
I tell you, you're fuming over that horse, eh? The Glaciers coming in.
Good man, Ed. Right, Rocket Gibraltar, yeah. The iconic racehorse that was at the centre of a tug of war that many fans believe ended up being the catalyst to the Glaciers family. Much maligned takeover of Manchester United has died. The horse dying. Who owned the fucking thing? JP McManus, yeah.
Just the
McManus owned
just the horse riding. I know a few people that their kids do is mad money.
Yeah, crazy money.
Like your hay, your stables, your, all the gear.
Looking after the horse. Then you have to pay to get the horse put down and all. Crazy shit. My missus used to have horses and something happened to her horse. They used to have to bring it to the vet in UCD because it's only like a equestrian vet in the country.
Yeah.
So yeah, my missus used to bleed and have horses and she was saying like if that went wrong, the thing used to have to go to UCD. It's the only equestrian vet in the country.
That's right, yeah.
And then when something happened to her horse, very specific, no vet had a clue. So they had to get the horse put down and the vet said, can we keep that horse? And from that, they were able to develop some study and if they seen it happen again, they were able to save horses.
Like, donate crazy
yourself crazy money in horses, yeah. Lads.
Yeah, no, it is. It's mental. But like, I mean, but in the RTE documentary, like, you know, like, your man says, what did you put in the horse? Ah, just a few quid. There'd be thousands going on the horses. Yeah. Like, do you know what I mean?
I don't know anyone that owns a horse, no?
Like, yeah, I know loads of people who own horses.
Decent, like, race horses.
No.
I know a few people that like, did put in on money, and then, again, me misses his friend.
Yeah.
Whole fella put in on a horse, and that thing, it won at, like, Cheltenham or something. They got, like, 60 grand.
Yeah. I've heard stories about that, about people who have
there was a horse,
had a race pub, horse that won.
Poor brother caught me the A1 day, years ago, they had this horse called Sublimity, right? And one of the brothers, Robbie, he used to be a jockey as well, like, but this horse was running... I think it was the Grand National or the Gold Cup or something. Yeah, the Gold Cup actually, I think it was. And the horse was 40 to 1. Everybody in the Bowser had money on it. Like, I know some lads have put a grand and all on it. And the thing romped in. They brought the horse down to the pub and all. No, not into the pub, but they had it outside there. I think I have pictures of it at home and all.
Mm-hmm.
They owned the horse.
Remember there was a horse walking out the pub in Cabra?
Yeah,
literally. The horse on the loose. Yeah,
they got that prize with loads of prizes as well.
The horse walking out the pub. I was like, what's going on here?
Yeah, the horse going rocking into that prize. That's happened loads of times. It's been some young people just coming in at the horse. Literally, the horse going nuts.
Yeah.
Kicking the place around and all. Like, you know
that's
what I mean?
Why I'm afraid of horses. I've seen the young people getting a kick in the face years ago, boys. And I swear to God, I haven't been well ever since, boys, honestly.
I was up in Cabra 1 year ago with me mate. If I went to school, he brought me to his horse with the hockey, right? And he was going around lifting the tail of other horses and getting his horses to jump up with the crack. Like, so there's probably people getting pregnant and all they didn't even know about, right? But he put me on the horse and there's like bareback and all. And whatever did this horse, it would only turn left, it wouldn't turn right for me, right? But I'm just going like nice and easy and all. And the dirty bastard comes up behind me and slaps the thing in the arse. But the horse back on. The tears and all coming down my face. But holding onto the horse for a good day of life and all. Did you stop the fucking horse? Swear to God.
Stop the horse. Turn the handbrake.
Fucking horse giving it. Oh, swear to God. That was me and the horses sort of. Think around from then on, like, you know what I mean? But yeah, beautiful animals.
Yeah, there's a blatant, huge horse culture in Ireland.
Massive.
Like, we're the best race horses in the world, aren't we?
Yeah, well, it's something to do with the grass, I think. No, they do
breed the bleeding, the fucking, and they have the festival in the RDS every year, the Aga Khan and all that shit. Do you know what I heard? Eddie used to play ice hockey for Ireland.
Ice hockey?
Yeah.
How did you even get into that?
We used to go to Fishbowl, Des Kiddies Forge Shop, yeah, well, that was a nice rink. It used to be a cinema originally, and then it was a nice rink.
I don't remember that, boy.
And me and Doc used to live in the place all the time. And then, like, your man bar you for skating too fast. So one, if someone said to me, here, if you... join the ice hockey team, you can skate as fast as you like. So we locked up one day, I think I had the knee pads and the holy helmet and all that. Yeah, man, gave me the gear, like, you could rent the gear off the team, like. And I was doing that for a while. And then, yeah, we went up and we represented Ireland and the European Championships 2000, what was it? Yeah, it was like 25 years ago or something. And we were the first ever Irish ice hockey team. We had our jerseys made by Nike and all that, home and away jersey, and named the back and all. And no one else has ever had them made by Nike, other than us, like. the kids got me a done for Christmas framed and all. Yeah, now I'm playing for Bleeding Ireland, but in with the Bulgaria played. I looked at Mighty Ducks, you were. You know what I mean? We didn't win a game or anything like that. Remember getting onto the big ice the first time, and none of our skates were sharpened enough because in their ice over there is like glass.
Yeah.
And then the ice in Facebook was very rough. So your skates didn't need to be, had to be mega sharp. So when we stepped onto the ice then, half of us were all sliding all over the gap, but we got a skate sharp and then we were all grand. But great experience.
If you have coming up, and you want to plug?
Yeah, we have a gig coming up down in Ennis in the West County Hotel on the 28th of June, and the tickets, you can get them on Eventbrite. So the link is on the pages.
We'll be there anyways. We're going to it. Yep. So
we're staying tonight as well, so we're going to the session after it.
Good up, Elva.
What, where's the link?
Link is on Facebook, Instagram, all that, on the Rattling Coin page, my page, and I think I have on the TikTok page as well.
Yeah.
Right, the Rattling Coin. And else coming up?
What else? It was a couple of gigs. Yeah, we're down in Wexford as well. Can't think of the date we're in Wexford. And we're also in... I have all that stuff on all the social media channels and all.
And there might be an album coming up, is that your
There's thing? An album we're actually recording. We have a full album recording now with the full band, the Rattling Coin. Like the start of the song was just something that came about, just the timing of it all. So they just put that on my own. That's actually up on my own Spotify page. But there's a full album there that's being recorded. So that's going to be, we're going to be dribbling across a couple of singles over the next couple of months, a couple of music videos as well. And then the whole album will be available then on Spotify, I'd say, probably by the end of the year nearly, like, you know.
Class.
We've been able to talk about Bollocks Live Show as well. You never know.
Yeah. Love that.
Yeah. Look how bad cold I am. No, go
And to go with that, you have videos as well coming up. Am I right?
Yeah, a few videos coming up as well, yeah, for the likes of the songs and that, so.
Right, so stay tuned.
Stay tuned, yeah.
Right, Eddie, thanks for coming into us.
No, but thanks for having me, lads. Well done.
But you're going to do the King of the Road for us, Eddie?
Do the King of the Road, yeah.
Good up, Belva.
Good up, Belva. Bye.
When you're hearing down the road, the lightning whirling that we're on the back of a silky racer. With the wind in your hair and the reins in your hand and the horse in your favor, you're king of the road. Crack it down on the Sunday morning, the convoy's in full flow. Chero jeeps and cars and vans and the horse box on its own. Hello to the edge of town, there's a big race going down. For snows to pass the 2 mile max around the king of the road. Remember Chip and Bill and the Indian Lassie Philly Grace. When the Chip took the goal on the Mulligan Road, was in the Indian's day. The Indian has blood to win, led by the big guy Joyce. So if the foes with the waiting goal, they found no many a race. When you're hearing out the road and on your mullin' network, back of a silky racer, wielding your hair and the reins in your hand and the horse, you're people, you're king of the road. Well, there ain't no noise on the big noise if there ain't a parent. Oh, well, the big noise ran for right the man, record he did break. Out of June, love, let out on a 2 mile stretch. Never beat us or lose, you're up there to pay your bets. When you're hearing down the road and on your money never, back of the silky racer, the wind in your hair and the reins in your hand and the horse, you're people, you're king of the road. Spins and 14 winds from the string with suffering me. Oh, where the record broke up the rings and road, one morning in the dirty year. Thomas Slack has left his mag with a fine black color cup. The love, hate, big noise, suffering crew, and of the Indians' mob. mob. Well, you're hearing on the road at 90 miles an hour, back of a silky racer. Well, in your hair on the reins, in your hand on the horse, in your favor, you're king of the road. Well, an hour on the back of a silky racer, but with the wind in your hair and the reins in your hand, horses in your favor, you're king of the road. And when you're hearing on the road, and I give an hour on the back of a silky racer, but with the wind in your hair and the reins in your hand, horses in your favor, you're king of the road.
Doodle. Class, Eddie.
Delhi.
Absolutely.
Delhi.
Class.
Subscribe to this podcast for free on the Go Loud app.
What you waiting for? Put your back in it. Just a little more. Throw your weight in it now. Fill your body up. Walk it hard and low. When you finish that.
The hip knocker.
Go down, go down, go down.